Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Time now for the DenverFan.com front page.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports, taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverFan.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
News team, assist!
We start with Will Peterson writing about this and how Nathaniel Hackett at his press conference yesterday owned up to his mistakes. And there's a lot to parse through here. The overall issue is, why is the communication on offense not sharper? Where is it bogging down? So when you've got Nathaniel Hackett saying, we've got to make sure the communication is clear and concise. I need to do better at making decisions faster and quicker and getting that information to the quarterback and being on the same page with him. He also went on to say, we have to communicate better. It starts with me and getting the proper information that I need. I get excited. I'm a little aggressive at times, and that sometimes that might not be the right decision. So I need to be sure that all the right information is given to me at the right times so we can make the right decisions. So let's parse through that real quick.
All right.
So the first issue is whoever's in his ear upstairs. Justin Outen. Whatever is just what inexperience, his inexperience is coming through, and what he's seen is taking him a little bit longer to process, and the recommendations he's making to Hackett, that's bogging down there. Is that the first step?
That would be
the bog down.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable assessment. I mean, I know you're kind of trying to point blame at one.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to actually. I'm in the process of making this a three-headed blame monster. Okay, so it's the upstairs.
Three-headed blame monster.
Three-headed blame monster. Yes.
That was head one.
That's the first head. Uh-huh. Second head.
Wait a minute. Second head sounds different.
What's that sound like?
Yeah. Ooh.
Second monster head is Nathaniel Hackett. Everything's moving a million miles an hour, and he's got this beautiful mind and everything and things that he's trying to do, and he's trying to process all the information, and he wants to do this, and he wants to do that. And instead of staying ahead of the play calling, he's chasing it the whole time.
Okay?
Okay. The second monster.
Okay.
Third monster head. is Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And Wilson isn't either confident with what he's hearing, or he's taking too much time walking up to the line of scrimmage and looking things over and saying, well, you know, this call might not match with this, and we got to change this and change that.
Yeah.
Three-headed monster, three problems. Shouldn't put it all on Nathaniel Hackett? That basically is what I'm implying here.
Yeah.
Should Nathaniel Hackett carry, he's the head coach, he's the play caller, I get it. It buck stops with him. But as you look at this whole thing, knowing what you know about how the offensive operation is supposed to work, divvy it up. Who's divvy up the blame pie here?
Yeah.
How much of his Hackett? How much of his Outen and people upstairs? How much of his Russ?
Right. Yeah. I don't know exactly what the. Everybody has a hand in that operation, without question. And I will say this: if the play is getting in a little bit late, Mike, and your quarterback is in a new system and he's going, okay, wait a minute, what we called. Like what we called in Brian Schottenheimer's offense, you know, there's a stick, there's a branch, there's a tree. Like they're all the same. They're just deeper, right? Like it's all a stick route is a 6 yard breaking out route. A branch just takes it to about 8 yards or 10 yards. A tree, you know, goes to 12, right? Like that's how you name things. Well, I mean, if you've got different names for the same thing, you know, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, branch, wait a minute, which one? Okay, yeah, branch, but we call it now, we call it like we call it river. When the we go from brook to creek to river. Like, it's the same thing, but different terminology. Like, wait a minute, it was river branch or stick or like,
you know, as you describe all this, you're doing a great job of describing all this. And I'm just thinking, geez, if only you had a chance, an opportunity to kind of, you know, work on these things and practice these things and, you know, work out some of the kinks on these things before the games got real and you became a national punchline. Oh, yeah, that's right. You did have that time.
You did work on it
in a jog through.
Correct.
Okay, well, again,
you blew it!
What were the sounds of the three monster heads?
Oh, that
first
was...
one upstairs. Hackett.
I can't. Right now. I'm just going to make this up again.
and quarterback.
Yeah. Very scary three-headed monster.
Listen, folks, what we do here in the morning, mm-hmm. we're professionals.
That's right. Don't try this.
Do not try this at home.
Don't go to work and try to go, well, it's a three-headed, the play-calling issues are a three-headed monster, and then try to go through the monster sounds.
Right.
I'm a trained professional.
That's right. We put hours and hours and hours of preparation into this.
Lots of thought.
Goes yeah, you can tell.
You know what I was thinking about, to interrupt you for
sure,
a second?
Sure, no, it's fine. Go,
we should get the Huff on to talk about what it feels like to, you know, for Judy to be playing with sore ribs.
Yes. What's it like to go up and make an athletic move and then be body slammed to the mm-hmm. ground? What's that feeling like?
Because the Huff would know. I mean, Huff would be out for the rest of the season.
I wonder if Judy
went to urgent care?
Well, or made the same sound.
That sound?
That sound. Like, you know, soul escaping the body sound.
Right. What if he turned red?
Oof. Beat red.
Just a question. Sorry.
Broncos got some good news on the injury front, as Andrew Mason writes about at DenverFan.com, as both Jerry Jeudy and Pat Surtain might not miss much time, if at any, at all. Both are now considered day-to-day, aren't we all?
Mm-hmm.
Injuries aren't good, and again, I won't harp on the fact that you just spent an entire preseason not playing anybody so that people wouldn't get hurt. Now you got basically 9 would-be starters all out now with injuries.
Wouldn't get hurt in the preseason.
I think the idea was...
legs and not getting hurt are two entirely different things. Ask Tulo.
Good point. Sorry. I apologize.
Yeah. We had that talk. I think I've educated you today on a couple of different things.
How much do you put the 1-on-1 start on injuries?
Oh, none.
Okay, good.
Yeah, zero.
But it can and will become a valid... Well, does it ever become a valid excuse in your mind? Injuries.
If you lose your starting quarterback and he's a good quarterback, you got to go...
Other than that, put that aside.
Listen, you hate to use it as an excuse.
But it is real.
Yeah, especially in today's game. Like, the roster construction has changed so much. When I first came in the league, Mike, every backup that we had, when I was in Washington, every backup that we had was a former starter somewhere else. You know, some guy that started 4 or 5 years and then he became a backup and he was like, that was just the natural progression. Today's game, you got your starters, you're paying them through the nose, and the majority of your backups haven't played. They're second year guys, and like most of them are probably going to get bounced out of the league, but they're backing up for a year, right? And you just pray that none of those guys actually ever have to play, because you're in trouble if they do. Kind of how the league is constructed. It's just different. That's why at the end of the year, you show me the least injured teams, and I'll show you the teams that are in the playoffs.
These are the kind of things that Cecil Lammy writes and talks about that I know you love. And you can't wait to, like, okay, Cece, what do you got?
Okay. I've seen a lot of quarterbacks without their shirt on.
Right.
Cecil writes at DenverFan.com, just dropped about an hour ago.
Okay.
Three quick and easy fixes for the Broncos to end their woes.
All right.
All right.
Here we go.
All right.
I love quick and easy fixes.
I love this. Okay. So quick and easy fix number one.
Okay. Numero uno, people.
Get the plays in faster.
Okay.
Is that a quick and easy fix, though?
Yeah. Yeah. If you get the plays in, if you get the plays in with 25 seconds left on the clock or 24 seconds left on the clock, yeah, that will help. That will help immensely. Yes, absolutely.
Well, don't you think that was an area of focus coming off the Monday night game, and it didn't seem to be better? So,
it should have been.
Do you think that they gave themselves a pass?
Yes.
For that, because of the atmosphere in Seattle, and they figured it won't be like that at home.
I do.
Okay.
I do. And that's understandable. That's not excuse making. That's understandable. Gave ourselves a pass, and guess what? It turned out that was a dumb idea. That's understandable, is it not? I think so.
Number two, quick and easy fix, according to Cecil. Asking for help is a strength. And that when you're an inexperienced coach like head coach like Nathaniel Hackett, asking for help when it comes to game day management isn't the worst thing. And you have somebody like that on your staff in Dom Capers, who's working with the Broncos as a senior defensive assistant. And Capers has been a head coach in this league with two different teams. And he could help Hackett with the game day problems. So would you look at that as a sign of strength or a sign of weakness if your head coach reached out and said, I'm a little overwhelmed right now, I could use your help?
Strength. The first year that Sean McVay was the head coach of the Rams, you know who his first hire was?
Wade Phillips.
Yeah. So I asked him, because I was doing a game his first year, why Wade Phillips? He said, I'd be a fool not to have somebody with his experience on my staff because I don't know it all. And he's been a coordinator. He's been a head coach. He's been through the pitfalls. I would be foolish not to lean on a guy like that and have a guy like that on my staff. If you want to talk about the one mistake, the biggest mistake that Nathaniel Hackett made in assembling his staff is he doesn't have a former head coach on his staff. He doesn't have a guy on his initial staff. Dom Capers, that's like, I didn't even think about that with Cecil. So that's actually that's a good idea. But just a game day operation and all those things. And I'm sure he's reached out to Dom in that regard. But
that's Dom.
Yeah, I know. Dom.
Not Don.
I know.
Like Dom Perignon.
I know that it's Dom.
Dawn.
I just said Dom. But I meant, I knew that it was Dom. It just Dawn came out.
Okay.
Not Dawn like D-A-W-N.
Right.
Like the dawn.
Of a new day.
Of a new day. I'm talking about Dawn.
Dawn.
D-O-N.
D-O-N. Like Dawn, like Dawn Draper.
Yes. But what about, is that like in a mafia? Are you a Don?
If you're a Don, if you're a mafia Don, that's D-O-N still. Right.
Yeah. But that's a Don.
It's not D-A-W-N. Tony Soprano was not a
No, he was not Don. Don of the day.
Right.
Don like Fawn. He was a Don. Like, I think, like, where did that, like, how did you become a Don? What is that from?
Yeah, what's the...
Is the first guy that was a mafia dude, was his name Don? Like, he came over and was like, and then everybody from that point forward was a Don? I don't know.
I know. Well, we haven't done this in a while. Two times in the same show. What are we talking about?
We're talking about Dons. Yeah. It's a good question.
It is a good question.
Right. I don't know where it came
I need
from.
The origination of the mafia Don.
New York, London, Paris, Munich, everybody talk about Don music.
You know what I do in these moments is I just GTS. It's just like ask the listeners.
Right.
Ramoslaw.com text line. Give me.
You say GTS?
Yeah.
Go to
Google that.
Oh, Google.
May I have the language of fortune, please?
Yes, the main language.
Just GTS it, man.
All right.
Deep GTS. All right, that's what's going on at DenverFan.com, the front page.
Google that stuff.
There you go.
Right.
Oh, one more quick and easy fix.
Oh, okay, yeah.
From Cecil.
Sorry, I got caught up on the dawn.
Yeah, that's okay. Run the damn ball. Boy, it would make it a lot easier, wouldn't it? At least while you're trying to figure this out and get the speed of the game and the plays in. Calling a running play is pretty simple, isn't it?
Yeah, and it slows stuff down.
Right.
My primitive mind can't grasp these concepts.
If only you had good running backs. Oh, you do.
Right.
Only in the first couple of games the running game actually looked good. Oh, it did.
Yeah. That would help.
Inconceivable.
Would help. Like, I'd like one of those games where, you know, you have 23 pass attempts and you have, you know, 42 runs. 38 runs.
Right.
Like, I'd like one of those games. By the way, you've got not only two good running backs, you got a third good running back. Boone's a good running back.
Yep. I would have no problem with him getting more time as well.
Sure. Give them all, you know, let them all eat. There ain't nothing wrong with that. And from an operations standpoint, it certainly slows the game down a bit.
I'm looking forward to having Joel Klatt on tomorrow for a lot of reasons. You know, he ended up doing play-by-play of his game.
I know.
What, Gus got sick or something?
Gus got sick.
And so Joel had to just do
everything they brought,
by himself.
I know they brought what's his head up? Handsome. He was here, the quarterback. Why is he escaping? I can see Brady Quinn. Very handsome.
Very handsome.
And then
yourself.
Yeah. And then I think somebody else came up there too.
And helped him out?
Yeah. Did they bring up Urban Meyer?
The jokes just write themselves?
Right. Yeah. I don't know if they did. But I know Brady came up there and they kind of
just became like a round table conversation. But Joel was kind of doing the play-by-play.
Yeah, well, Joel is.
Joel can do. He can do everything.
Joel is just, he's.
I made him, you know. Right here in this studio.
Birthed him.
I birthed him.
The big mom.
I you know, mama catted him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I sent him out.
And you sent him out into the big. The thing about you, Mike, is that you're not.
And now look at him.
Right. You're not afraid to groom. You're not afraid to give them the tools to be successful and then send them out on their way. Like, just pat them on the hiney with their little. Yep. You sent Joel out. He had a little backpack with a matching lunch pail. Said Joel on it. Off into the world you sent
You got
him.
This. I believe in you.
Yeah.
And look at him now.
I know. I mean, he owes you a debt of gratitude.
The word Don in Italian means boss.
Oh, apparently, it's an Italian word. Who knew?
So,
wow.
Okay. Well, that
makes sense.
Actually, that makes sense.
I think that makes a heck of a lot of sense.
Boss
man.
He's the Don.
He's the Don.
Boss.
He's the boss.
Who the gangster?
So,
so Joel will be on tomorrow. My point being is that Joel. I love when Joel talks about and this was always something that came up when we were trashing Pat Shurmur on a daily, weekly basis. But he always said. Too many play callers chase the game.
Yes.
They're constantly playing catch up with their play calls. And the best ones are the ones that actually are dictating by their play calling because they are able to set things up, because they can see what's going on. They have such a feel for the game that their play calling allows them to stay ahead of the defense. And the defense is the one that's constantly playing catch up. And for too long, in his opinion, we watch Pat Shurmur, Mike McCoy, Billy Moose, they were all playing catch up with the play calling. Now, I'm sure that had a lot to do with who their quarterback was, but still, that was the idea. And
the difference between dictating to a defense, like I'm dictating to you, I'm making you change personnel. I'm making you do this stuff, and you essentially, as a defense, are chasing me.
Right.
It's like a game of tag, right? So yeah, I mean that makes sense to me. You know, one of the things and
Hackett is chasing right now.
Yeah, I think it's a great analogy, Mike. I'm thinking about it from the 49ers standpoint, the team that we're about ready to face, right? And one thing they have on the defensive side of the ball, and I talked to D'Amico Ryans about this as a defensive coordinator. I also talked to Fred Warner about this, who's an all-pro middle linebacker. The guy is a phenomenal player. And they have got what I would argue they've got the best three linebackers probably in football when you combine all three of them together. So they've got Dre Greenlaw on one side, Azeez Alshire on the other side, and they've got Fred Warner in the middle. And the thing about those guys is they don't have to come off the field. So when you start to flip around personnel and try to get them to match you, like you come out in three wides, you come out in nickel, or you even come out in four wides, right, where most teams will match you in dime, they have no problem staying base. And so a lot of times you'll do that to a team offensively. You'll say, hey, man, we're going to come out in three wides and, like, we're going to come out really small. Three wides in our receiving tight end. We know, everybody knows that guy's not going to block a soul, right? And so they match you in nickel or dime personnel. So they bring in, they take out a linebacker, they take out two linebackers, bring in a safety and a corner. And you do that simply because you know now we're going to favor a matchup in the box with small players and we're just going to pound you, right? A lot of times they get small so you get small so they can play big, right? They want to run the ball in those situations. Well, San Francisco just say, forget you. We're going to stay in base. Now what? Now we're forcing you to throw the ball, and we're so confident in our ability to rally and make tackles and to cover out of that stuff because we play all a matchup zone. You know, like, they're not afraid to do that. So they get you to chase them as opposed to you chasing.
On the whole idea of the chasing thing, on the whole idea of chasing, dictating, you for years you've talked about Broncos don't have an identity on offense. They need an identity. They don't have an identity. You guys, when you were winning back-to-back Super Bowls here, you guys had a clear identity, and I tell me if I'm overstepping here, but it was almost like, hey, look, we don't care what they're doing. We know what we do.
Right.
We know what we are, and we're going to go out and do it, and you try to stop us. I just wonder if part of what we're seeing these first 2 weeks is there's just too much reaction to what the other team's doing rather than this is what we feel we should do.
Right. I think part of that, Mike, also is we're not quite sure exactly what we are. We're trying to figure what it is that we do best. And right now, to me, you're running the ball exceptionally well. And that would be the first place I would hang my hat, especially, Mike, in the red zone. Especially in the red zone. Like you said, if there was only a way you could have figured that out earlier than wait to the first two games to start to figure that out. If only
there was a way.
If there was just a... if maybe you could play practice games or...
You can't do that. Come on. Live in the world of reality. Will you stink? Come on.
I know.
Coming up, if Russell Wilson has indeed lost this part of the game that makes him special, how can he take a page from a Bronco legend to still be an elite quarterback? And nobody's better to talk about this than Mark Schlereth.
Ooh, that's a tease.
Mark has no idea where I'm going with this, folks.
None. But I can't wait to talk about myself, though.
None. But he's really intrigued by the idea that he's an expert.
Wheelhouse. You just brought up my favorite subject, me.
Next.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
It's time for Schlereth and Evans' big story of the day.
Funny, it's just that you're so big.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big means big. Big means huge.
This was not just designed to give you chills as Broncos country, although you're welcome. There was a point to this that I wanted to get into with you, but let's just kind of savor the moment there and savor the memory. All made possible, by the way, by Mark Schlereth missing his block.
You're welcome.
Oh, you're so sad. You know, it's funny. Quick story. So we were at the then Pepsi Center at a Boy Scout breakfast. Mike Shanahan was the speaker.
Yes, I remember
And he
that.
Came and sat down with us, and we talked about that play.
Uh-huh.
And we joked about how you made that play possible because you missed the block.
Right.
And Mike came to your defense and started talking about how, no, that was the play design. And Mark did exactly what he was supposed to do. And I looked over at you and you just kind of winked at me.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, I'm,
you know what's funny about that? You know what's funny about that is, so it was a joke. Like I had, it came out as a joke. I was on Mike and Mike at the time nationally, you know, and talking about that play and, you know, and I went through this whole story about how I missed my block and it forced Elway out of the pocket. And, you know, how I single-handedly won the Super Bowl and we're ha, 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 ha. And it just gained steam. Like, people kind of pick up on the fact that they're like, you know, and it became like urban legend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm doing Mike and Mike and they book Elway as a guest. And so they bring up that play, and Elway just is like, yeah, Stink misses his block, forces me out. Like, he bought into the urban legend.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it just became like a complete and total urban legend. And like I say, you know, all the time, you this business, the most important part of this business is not to let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Absolutely.
Right? You gotta, sometimes you have to manipulate the truth a little bit. Massage it.
There's a reason.
Down.
There's a reason why I had that play. As a way of coming back into this segment, because I wanted to talk about the John Elway that we watched late in his career. Because when Brock Heward came on with us about 45 minutes ago and said, hey, look, I just don't see the same, it's not even athleticism, I just don't see the same explosiveness from Russ that I've seen in the past. Okay. And look, every quarterback who gets older is going to have to, who's been a mobile quarterback, is going to have to adjust and sort of reinvent his game.
Sure.
How did John Elway do it? Because that, in many respects, different kind of athlete. But still, John Elway was, I mean, it's like maybe him and then you could just talk about other people after. But when you talk about the most athletic quarterback ever, he certainly is in the top three. Am I right?
The most athletic quarterback ever?
In terms of being able to make plays on the run, escape, run with the football, extend plays, throw while being on the move, all that stuff.
I think you've got to qualify that as the best quarterback who happened to be a great athlete as opposed to most athletic quarterback.
Like, okay. Like, you're right. That's almost like, that's selling him a bit short, just calling him.
Right. Well, I mean, but he's not the athlete that Michael Vick was. He's not the athlete that probably... And, you know, there's a few other, and there's not many, but there's a few other guys, obviously Lamar Jackson.
The best quarterback who was athletic.
Yeah, who was exceptionally athletic.
All right, whatever.
Okay.
The fact is, he lost that ability to do it as easily as he did it in his 20s and early 30s. He had to adapt as he got older.
Sure.
You played with him. You were in the huddle with him. You were in the film room with him. He made the transition. And he did it flawlessly to the point where he was a terrific passer at the end of the game, at the end of his career, and he won back-to-back Super Bowls, was a Super Bowl MVP. How did he do it?
He would, but I will tell you that he was more Toby Keith.
Okay.
I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. Like, he had a Toby Keith quality to him. When he needed to do it, it was there. When he needed to reach down in the tank and scramble and make something happen, he could do it. Just chose not to do it most of the time.
Okay, so, I think we're seeing some of that with Russ right now.
I think so too. I think.
But Russ, Elway made that transition.
Right, I think.
How did he? That's my question. How did he do it? Because Russ has to make a transition.
Right.
Russ has to evolve. What did Elway do?
I think Elway picked his spots. And I think here's how it works. Okay. Throw it away. Pick your spots. Dump it off. Find your check down. You know, operate from within the context of the pocket. But in critical situations, go make a freaking play. And I think what you're seeing here is a hesitancy in some of those. I don't think Russ is. Although I'm with Brock, He looks a lot less explosive these first 2 weeks, but I think it's more by design than it is he can't reach down the tank and get it. I think he probably still can, but he just hasn't. Now, is he going to be Kyler Murray? No. But you and I both know what a great comeback that was. What an unbelievable comeback. Now, the Raiders blitzed at a 30% rate in the first half and a 15% rate at the second half. Or like they got 40% pressure in the first half versus 10% pressure in the second half. Well, you know, again, it's like that's your own stupidity. And I get it, you build up a big lead, so now you don't want the big play to get you, right? But at some point when you're letting them back in the game, maybe you ratchet it back up to what was working early. It's hard, though. You know, we've all experienced it, right? When you're playing against somebody that you're better than and you ease up, like you're playing hoops with your son or whatever, and you know you can beat your son, right? You're like, oh, this is not a big deal. And all of a sudden you ease up and you let him kind of get back in. Then he gets a hot hand. He starts draining threes on you. You're like, oh, and you can't get your stuff back. Next thing you know, you get beat for the first time, and you're like, hey, great job, son. And under your breath, you're like, you little son, you know? It's kind of one of those things. So I think that Elway understood the critical moments. I'll reach down in the tank and grab it, and I'll go.
Okay, but he also made a conscious decision, and it was drilled into him.
Right.
And he accepted that, and he embraced it, and he worked at it to understand, yeah, I can do it when I need to.
Right.
One time a game, two times a game. But I'm now at a stage in my career where I have to do it
differently. Okay, let me ask you this
so
really quick.
So how did he get to a point where, hey, six, seven, eight times a game I'm looking to take off. Now I'm only going to do it once or twice.
When do you think that transition was made?
That's what I'm asking you.
No, I'm asking you. Do you think it was made? I think it was made because he was in the same offense for 95, 96, 97, 98. And I think part of that was Mike going, hey, man, we're going to take some pressure. We're going to take some of the stuff off your plate, right? We're going to run the ball. We're going to take some of that stuff. We're going to get the boot keep game going. We're going to give you some easy throws. Yada, yada, yada. You know, we're going to help manage the game for you.
And did you see, that's the reason I teased all this as you being the expert.
Right.
Because you were there for all of it. You witnessed it.
Right. And I think it really started transitioning in 95 when Mike got here because it was a different thought process. Remember, I didn't play with him in those years where he's scrambling around taking all those sacks. So it was just.
Did it take a while?
Oh, I think it took a while. I've talked to Mike about just the overall, you don't know what you don't like until you do it a couple of times, until you log all those pictures. You know, you log all those looks in your brain. You're like, I'm not really comfortable with this particular play. I don't really like this, like, against this defense. It just, I don't feel comfortable with that. Like, but until you go through it, until you throw a couple of picks, until you have a couple of incompletions, until you make a couple of, you know, boneheaded decisions, you don't know. And that's for all of us as players.
We're two games in with a lot of newness. I had somebody, I will leave his name out of it, who just said, are you starting to worry that the Seahawks may have sold us a lemon? I'm not. Not right now. Not two games in. Because right now I see a quarterback and an offense where there's a whole lot of thinking and not a whole lot of just going out and playing going
they
on.
They wouldn't sell us a lemon. This is some fly-by-night used car salespeople.
Pete Carroll's got a little used car salesman in him.
It just depends on
this. This car's got your name on it.
Just depends on which car is what time you get, Pete.
That's right.
You're done. Get the F out of here.
Right. All right. That was interesting. But Elway did it, and but like you made a great point, though. It was a culmination of multiple years. We'll talk more about that as we roll on. Chad and Nate coming up at the top of the hour next.
It's
Larith and Evans on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Biggest takeaway from Nathaniel Hackett's press conference yesterday for you?
I thought humility. You know, there's an old saying in sports, Mike. Two types of athletes. You can apply it to coaches. You can apply it to just anything related to professional sports. There's two types of people. Those who are humble and those who are about to be. And you got a little taste of reality of you got humbled. You know, it came from, it ain't my first rodeo. I've called plays before. Like, and I get it. Like, I think we've all been there. You know, about the time you think you've arrived, and then somebody kicks you right in the yarbles. Been there. Had that happen to me in my career. And it is humbling. It's eye-opening. It's like, oof. And I think that was apparent yesterday. And I appreciate that. And you know who else will appreciate that? Players. Because as a player, you know, there's not one of us that has ever played that hasn't had his ass whipped in a game, right? And that is one of those things where it's like going in to face your team after you just got like absolutely trucked and waylaid, and it's gut-wrenching.
I think that was all Hackett. Like, I just, hey, I'm going up there. I'm going to fall on the sword. Or you think that this was a sort of organizational mandate that came down from maybe even the new club president, right? Damani Leach may have had a role in this. George Payton, Patrick Smythe, sure, from a public relations standpoint, that, hey, coach, how you came across last week didn't go over well.
Yes.
And you got to...
But that's what
this is going to be your message, mm-hmm, and these are going to be your talking points.
And
does it work that way?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Okay. But it's not like, you know, is it, what's the word? Dictum from on high, like, right, this is what you're going to do. It's more about, hey, let's circle up here and let's discuss the best way to address what's gone on through 2 weeks, because last week, not only were we, after the game, the laughingstock, but then, you know, during the week, it felt, your word, your phrase, I wish I'd have came up with it, not that you invented it, but it was just a perfect term, wishy-washy. It was wishy-washy. It was, hindsight being 2020, probably should have made the call, but hey, we had a great plan, that was our plan, and, it was just like, well, would you have done it differently, or was it the great plan? Like, I mean, obviously, your 64-yarder can't be your plan. If that's your plan, it's a dumb plan. And so I think they probably had a little, you know, a little kind of organizational, let's get together here and let's discuss what happened and let's discuss on how we're going to move
forward. They also made the mistake of thinking that the Seattle thing, that was one night in a vacuum, meaning...
Yeah,
it was a special set of circumstances.
Right.
Extremely loud.
Mm-hmm.
No other road team had to play that challenging of a game in week one in the NFL. We'll just leave it at that. Put that aside.
Yeah.
We're coming home.
Right. You know what you call that? That's a Murray Head game.
I know the song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how this...
One Night in Bangkok.
Yeah.
One night in Bangkok makes the tough guy tumble, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's
this was like one night in Seattle?
Yeah, one night in Seattle.
Oh,
it's like,
I see.
Murray Head, one night in Bangkok.
All right, I got you. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It was
sense,
just one night in Seattle.
There's one night that you can write it off as like, it was just a...
You're really good. I bet you can't do... Could you do What Happened in Seattle to One Night in Bangkok? Can you just make up... You're very good. You're a cipher. Your ability to put lyrics together.
A cipher?
Yeah.
What's a cipher?
Isn't that... You know, somebody that can put, you know, rap and put together on the fly, lyrics and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you're really good at that. Can you?
I don't know the lyrics well enough. I mean, you could go, one night in Seattle makes the tough coach crumble, right?
right. Like that.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Not much between fourth and five and a long field goal, you know. But I don't know the lyrics. That's not well bad, enough.
I think if I gave right. you some time to listen.
Well, if I could hear, yeah, if I could hear
just the instrumental part, and then you can right. probably start if to I put could it together.
Hear,
right?
If I could hear the lyrics, uh-huh. then I could make up a song.
Sure, sure. Yeah. yeah. So, but that's the thing. I think they looked at it as that was a bit of an aberration.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back home, and it'll be...
Yeah, but that's, we won't have an operational issue. Right. We're not going to have to deal with the crowd noise. We're not going to have to deal with the 12s. We're not going to have to deal with, you know, all the things that we had to deal with.
But the fact that it was an issue again, and so much of an issue that Nathaniel Hackett had to come out and apologize for it, I keep coming back to... These are football people. These are smart people.
Mm-hmm.
These are people that have been around the game a long time. Why is this almost like nobody saw this coming?
Right.
That's the part that I don't get.
Listen.
How did you not see this coming?
If you would have opened up in Los Angeles against the Chargers and you would have had that issue because the majority of that stadium would have been filled with Bronco fans, you would have had that issue. You'd have said, hey, we got to fix this issue. But Seattle, and you know, goes back to, you know, George Payton said it's the toughest place in the National Football League to play, you know, from a crowd noise standpoint and everything else. The environment there. Like, that was just that's just considered like industry standard, right? So you're looking at it from the standpoint of, oh, yeah, you know, you can write that off. You can say, our operation was bad, but, you know, there was a reason. It's because right. we were in Seattle. So, and we still moved the ball up and down the football field, even though we had a bad operation. We had two fumbles inside the 1 yard. Like, come on. Like, that's never going to happen again, right?
You can
write all that stuff up. And like, that's reasonable. That's not arrogance. It's a reasonable way to think. But then when it happens again, you're like, oh, shoot. There's more to it than just that. And probably should have addressed it, but we didn't. And I think that is one of those things. You come out and you're humbled a bit and you realize that, hey man, I'm gonna accept responsibility. And I just tell you this, I appreciate that as a former player, and if I was in that locker room, I would appreciate that, because, you know, when the coaching staff takes responsibility, that's a good thing. The players go, all right, like, that's, again, that's from a, it's like parenting, right?
Yeah. Something Vic Fangio would never have done, which is why the players never embraced him.
Right. It's a great point.
Write it down in your little handy-dandy notebook. Every once in a while.
By the way, I got to tell you something.
It's a big thrill for me. Every once in a while, I'll say something, and I'll see you write it down. I'll be like, all right. Yeah.
You made the notebook.
Made the notebook. Cool.
By the way, meeting with Kyle Shanahan on Friday. Meeting with Kyle Shanahan on Friday. He referenced Vic Fangio and how pretty much Vic Fangio and his defense has taken over the majority of the teams in the league.
Uh-oh. All right. There's our tease for tomorrow. I need to explore that a little bit more. Okay. Tune in for that one tomorrow.
Mm.
In the meantime, we're done. Thank you, Fever. Great job behind the glass. Up next, it's the Players Club. Next here on The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.